Shop of Maniacs. What's happening? This is a wrap. I'm Dave the Q, and with me is A, Chris Coyier. Hey, hey, hey. What did I do, Chris? I shouldn't have done this. I want out. I want to redo. Hi, Chris.
Hi. How you doing, man? Just some freestyle rapping, you know? Never know what I'm in
freestyle for rapping. Here. I got some bacon here. I'm going to do some ASMR for the crowd. That was for the crowd.
That sounds like some delicious bacon. It sounds like it might have maple syrup on it, and it's going to make my fingers sticky if I touch it.
Yeah. have you used Dan Benjamin's bacon method? I think this is a Dan Benjamin / Ryan Ireland invention.
I have, and it left to my own devices, I wouldn't do it any other way. It's really good.
Really? Yeah.
Yep. I think that you just put some bacon in the frickin' oven. You don't even preheat the oven, and you cook it. I know that I don't remember the exact numbers offhand, but it's pretty easy to Google.
400 degrees for 20 minutes.
Boom. So. Yeah, you take it out, and your bacon's done. There's just some beauty to the simplicity of it.
You know? Yeah, it takes a long time, and you know, if you have an oven like mine, you have to do like 420 for 25 minutes or whatever. But you know, you figure it out for your oven, but. But it's pretty righteous, and it makes pretty good bacon every time. That's the thing I like about it. Is like it's
yeah, it's good. I've gone all over the place. I've been a microwave guy. In fact, I had like a little like TV, you know, as seen on TV, kind of bacon thing where you kind of put the bacon kind of vertical. Oh, the tree was good too. You dangle it over the top of the.
Oh, it's so gross. Yeah, it just leaves a pool of just. Yeah. Bacon fat.
It did a good job, though. I had one where you like put them horizontally, kind of upright. That was a little funky. Oh, yeah. I do like it when you're done, because the alternative, of course, is like a frying pan. But the frying pan is like, it requires a lot of management as it's happening to like restraighten the pieces out and stuff. And then the bottom part of it burns. The other half is still like juicy, fatty. Like frying pan is really not a great way to go. And you can't.
Non-scientific. So I go camping. This is a lifestyle podcast now that tangentially relates to web design, but go camping with friends, right? We have a little camping crew that we go out with, and it's great, but we always are like, you know, you get into the gear for camping, right? You're just like, oh, if I just had this one thing, camping would be awesome, you know? And we have pop-ups, trailers and stuff now, like we've geared up significantly. But the one thing I'm like now obsessed with is at Home Depot, you can get these propane griddles. Like it's like a 2-foot by 3-foot griddle that's propane powered, just like a barbecue grill, like, but it's just a frame, like a big piece of metal propane griddle. Like it's only like $200, which in like camping gear terms, that's nothing. Like that's free, basically. but like, and I'm just like, dude, how bad do I want this? Is basically the question. Cause it's just like, this would be so cool to like just chuck this little metal frame. You know, I guess it's probably like 30 pounds of cast iron, but like chuck that in my truck and then. Ah, you're having bacon on a griddle?
Yeah.
Flapjacks.
Don't say no, Dave. I like the idea of like exotic camping cooking gear. Like what can you pull off? Like can you pull off an oven, you know? One time my friend showed up camping who had like a 1/4-inch pole, big steel pole, and the idea is that you hammer that next to your campfire. So the heating source is all campfire based, but attached to that pole was all kinds of fascinating stuff that you just slip onto the pole. It had a little hitch to it, and you just kind of slide it onto the pole, and it's stuck on the pole. But that gives you 360, you know, so you can move it, you can pivot it on the pole, and then all the things that were attached to the arm could also pivot. So you had like a thing to cook burgers, and you could really move things around and get them just where you needed for the campfire. But it was like a grill part, a griddle part. There was big thing for stew, you know, what do you call that? Dutch oven kind of deal, a vat.
Yeah.
But the whole idea was everything was based on this pole. It's like pole cooking. I loved it.
This is, oh man, this like, you know, it's like my, what's my quit tech plan is maybe like start a camping blog, like gear review, like this is good for kids or whatever. Like that's my quit tech plan for you. So, but I was wondering, this is tangentially, I'm pulling it back to websites now. Is that okay? I'll pull it back to websites.
Sure.
You know, I was thinking the other day, is the era of starting a blog like over? Does that make sense? Like, like the era of like, I'm just going to like start a blog and make money, like blogging about this thing I like. I wonder if that's over-ish. I don't know. I like, now you got to be a startup and you got to like have millions of people mining their data and stuff like that. Like, is the era of just starting a blog kind of over?
I mean, is it a passion thing? Or, you know, because I still see people be like, I'm going to travel the world for 1 year and I'm going to do a Tumblr for it, and it turns out pretty cool or whatever. And that's not a business plan. That's just for fun. Or like, I'm going to chronicle my garden. That kind of stuff doesn't seem particularly dead. Although, to spin up your own site and have all that technical debt, I feel like people are shying away from that a little bit. You're probably more likely to do a WordPress.com Squarespace thing, or maybe still a Tumblr thing. You know, we'll see what Automattic does with Tumblr. That could be a good thing. But if you're like, I'm going to start a new blog to blog about my passion because I want it to be at least in part a business model. I don't know. Was blogging ever that? I mean, I want that. I'm a fan of that.
No, I want it to exist. And I felt like there was a time like, oh, he runs a blog. I think I was talking to my friend Rod last night about this. You know, him and some friends run this movie blog called Synapse.
Okay.
My friend Rod and
are they,
Travis.
Do they think of it as a business deal?
Travis. I don't know, but then they're all connected to like the Austin movie scene, and Alamo Drafthouse is kind of involved in that, you know?
Right.
And so like they go to like premieres and stuff and talk to directors and all this. And like, so it's maybe they're getting what they want out of it. Maybe it doesn't pay the bills and they retire and, drive Ferraris, but like maybe they're getting what they want out of it, you know? I don't know.
Yeah.
That's what I wonder.
Are we trying to compare it to some heyday of it where there is tons of it or what? Is that the vibe you get, is that there used to be a lot of it?
Yeah. Could you start Boing Boing today?
That's interesting. Yeah. Because, I mean, there's still like the Gawker Universe stuff and the Vox Universe stuff, but those are big operations. I mean, you go to visit Vox, it's a big office with tons of people there. Yeah,
it's a BDG.
That is not a blog, but Boing Boing probably never was that. Boing Boing didn't have floor 37 of some skyscraper. You know, that's not. I doubt that's how it operated. Although I don't know. But it seems like there is a little bit of a rise of the little guy doing the paid newsletter thing. I mean, I literally subscribe to Dan Frommer's thing, The New Consumer. Have you seen that one? I think he does a fabulous job of it. It's like very clear business model. It's like $100 a year. Not cheap. And all you get is a freaking email. Like, that's it. And so, like, would it have succeeded better as a blog that's monetized? I don't know. I mean, the only way to monetize that is to throw ads on it like I do,
choose to monetize that. Like, he can still like put an article up and run ads on it. I think he links mostly to like his, it looks like he does kind of post some stuff on.
Yeah. Line, maybe there's it's like one free to three paid or something. I don't know. You have to look. He's very open about the publishing schedule and what he does and stuff. I think, you know, I did it on a whim. Which is a silly way. Yeah, I just think it's
$200, dude.
Is it $200? Yeah. No way.
Now it's $200. I mean, you must have got.
I would have paid $200. That's maybe I did, but I don't think so. I mean, maybe you changed it. Anyway, I like the vibe of it. That like the way that we buy things as people is like dramatically changing rather quickly, and so that's kind of the vibe. And I think he's just a terrific writer and focuses on interesting things. And I literally just read it and like it. In art, I mean, that has nothing to do with web technology, but I also subscribe to the WordPress one, the Post Status, is a paid WordPress produced newsletter that I think is just like, I don't know. I want good WordPress news because I still care about WordPress land and I'm fascinated by that ecosystem. So I literally pay for it.
Like, you can't like, well, I guess you could, but you can't like do a Twitter search term for WordPress and hopefully like find the signal versus noise, you know, like that's and run a business like Codepen. You can't like do that. You can't. So in some ways those like, you know, newsletters super help, you know, like they can cut out a lot of time and effort to find something. So I don't
know. Yeah. And there's, you know, whatever, there's like the Six Colors membership and there's stuff. It's weird to see how much of it is email based, you know, because I think the idea of like a paid RSS feed kind of like died. That was like a little weird, you know, like you get some special key and then you subscribe in your RSS reader. Like we could talk about RSS till we're blue in the face, but it's like it's never had its heyday. Like maybe it arguably did with Google Reader, but you know, but it still finds a way to hang on. You know, you'll hear people like me singing its praises, but I do think it's worse off even than podcasts. And podcasts, everybody and their brothers trying to solve the discoverability problem, and there's, you know, money being thrown at it and stuff. You know, you don't see any economic activity around, can I sponsor your RSS feed, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know. Here's how to solve the podcast problem. Discoverability is pay your listeners to tell their friends, which is a new plan we're announcing here at Shop Talk. We'll pay. But you know, that's like, I think friend recommendations go so far for podcasts. Like you almost need like a podcast sommelier. And I know there's like been like digital attempts, like tell us a podcast you like, oh, here's some recommendations, you know?
Yeah.
But you really need like I don't know, almost like when you go to a restaurant and there's 10,000 wines, you need a sommelier to be like, okay, what flavors do you like? Can you name a wine you have liked? And then, okay, I'll find something like that. And here's a pop and here's what makes this one good.
They drink that glass of wine and then they have that knowledge forever if they're a great sommelier. You know, then they can recommend it for years to come, whereas podcasts are so transient. You know, I was almost skeptical of the podcast whose job it is to listen to a bunch of podcasts and then like share with you clips and commentary about the best in podcasting this week. I'm like, the numbers don't work out there. Like if you listen to podcasts 24 hours a day, you could only listen to a very small percentage of
24.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and then you'd have no time for your life or to do anything else, you know? So it's like, I almost like don't trust those podcasts to be giving me that wide of a swath. You know, you need like a huge team of people doing it or something. It like needs a crowdsourcing component to it to make that kind of work.
With tastemakers.
Podcast influencers.
Yeah. Like you can't just do like, I don't know, like I can't like pay a Mechanical Turk to like listen to the podcast and tell me if it's good. You know, like I guess I could, but that doesn't help me, you know. Anyway, speaking of newsletters, Dan Sinker, do you know Dan Sinker? This is really relevant to, I like his work, but, he runs a impeachment.fyi newsletter. It's very political, but it's just kind of catching up to date on all the stuff, that's happening in politics and whatnot. And that's all and who knows, like whenever this comes out, this could all be over and crashed and burned or whatever. But like, I like these kind of focus, like paying an actual journalist to like kind of actually curate a list of things that here's something you should read. Here's a summary. I really like that model, of news. So
would he do it anyway? Or is there some cash number that he's shooting for that would make this a success or fail?
Yeah, I don't know. So I Venmo'd like $20 or whatever, just because I want to support it. But what's neat is there's a subscribe button and then it says support this work on PayPal, Venmo, or cash, like Square Cash. What I like about that is it's just, and I think the View community does this too. It's like, here's this thing. It is entirely free. Just like, but here's how you support it. Like having those two things together are very
cool. I'm interested to dig into why, like your like love of this in a way. Like I can, on some level it makes sense. Like it's nice to just, it's just a clear call to action. It's like, pay, you like this thing, give the person some money. But there's GitHub sponsors, there's Patreon, there's like versions of Kickstarter type of things.
Yeah. I have a Twitch, but yeah, no, I'm not.
No, but like, it seems like you could count the people that actually make significant, like, I can support myself on this, or this is a significant part of my income on one hand, you know, like maybe that's not fair, but it's like, sure, Henry Zhu from Babbel does okay on it, or Evan Yu does okay on it, but Dan Sinker is not going to do okay on it. Probably it's too, or maybe he will because this thing is even bigger in scope than just some tech project. So maybe this catches the world's eye and he does great on it, but there's no paywall. So guaranteed it's going to be like 1% or less of people choose to do it at all. And, and that you get 1% even if, of people seeing it, even if there was a paywall. So the fact that there's not probably means it's way less, you know, like so few people are going to do this. So it'd be interesting to ask Dan Sinker at the end of this, what'd you make? Did you make $100? Did you make $1,000? Did you make $10,000? What was your bar of what put into this? Like, could this be a little job for you? Just having one P tag that says support this work by PayPal, Venmo, or Cash App. Like, to me, that just seems like, I don't know, give me a tip. Just rub my shoulders a little bit, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah, it's beer money or coffee money, like to just put something there. And that's what I wonder, too, is like maybe there's two tiers here. Like the service he is providing is not journalism per se. He's not like on the beat with a pad and paper and a hat that says press on it, you know, but he's curating, you know, and so maybe we're paying for curation and maybe that is entirely worth it. I do a Patreon for this video games guy that I watch all his videos, and it's Game Maker's Toolkit with Mark Brown, if you are interested. But I do the Patreon, and part of a reason I still do the Patreon is he sends out this beautiful, like almost like a week notes, but it's like monthly. It's just like, here's every article and every video I watched this month. Like, here's just a list and a little snippet about it. And I just, it's gold. It's solid gold to me. And so nice. I'm going to pay $5 a month for it. So like, I think there's value in curation. So
there is. And some people just give it away and some people don't, you know, that's what's tricky is like, you're going to be, unless you're incredible at it, somebody might just come along and step on your toes by doing the same thing for free. I don't know. I don't even know what I'm saying. I have so many millions of billions of thoughts about this. You know, like the point is, it's not just, you can't just snap your fingers and invent your own passion-based job. It's super hard. I guess it always has been hard.
When that was always the, or that's like the do what you love, right? Like it's written in cursive. It's on you above your toilet. like I'm very into that. And, you know, there's a big spirit. I don't know if you remember Brooklyn Beta back in the early 20 teens. But it was a conference kind of about that, like just not mindless tech and stuff like that. Like let's find what we're like, how we can use our technical skills to do better good, I guess, sort of. I really like that. And I like that spirit, but then, you know, very quickly it becomes like, do what you love. It's like, well, okay, I want to do blog for dogs. You know, it's like, is that what we talked about? But, you know, maybe you do love blog for dogs and that's what you want to do. I don't know. Is blog for dogs okay? It's probably fine, but it's maybe not world changing, but it's a lot of people love their dogs.
I mean, it's the classic starving artist thing. Like, there's people that are like, I would love to do art, but at least there's a cultural norm that's telling me that if I choose to go down this path, the economics of it don't work out particularly well. And that's like a known. It's known for musicians, too. Like, yeah, you want to play your guitar all day, you totally can, and you can get savvy. You could blow up, which you won't do, but, you know, needle in a haystack does. Or you could get clever with your finances and stuff, but it's pretty well known that you're not going to be a rich person.
Maybe we need a starving blogger trope. Like the image rebrand of a blogger needs to be this, like, just struggling.
The struggling blogger. Creative.
The struggling blogger.
Now you're onto something. That's something.
Now I'm pulling at heartstrings, and that's how I'm going to get the Patreons. Oh, I'm just a struggling content producer. Please, please buy my product.
This episode is brought to you by GiveWell. Imagine that you want to help children. You found two trustworthy organizations, but they run different programs. One can save a child's life for every $300,000 donated, while the other can save a child's life for every $3,000 donated. If you could tell the difference, you'd donate to the one that was 100 times better at saving children's lives. But in reality, it's often hard to know what charities will actually be able to accomplish with your donation. GiveWell spends 20,000 hours each year researching charities. They review academic studies, charity budgets, and visit charities on the ground to figure out which ones are the best at saving or improving lives. All of their research is public and free on their website. Go to givewell.org/shoptalk to find out more or make a donation. First-time donors will have their donation matched up to $1,000 if they donate through givewell.org/shoptalk. Our thanks to GiveWell for sponsoring this episode.
This goes into a question pretty nicely. We have this one from Nick Van Morrison, the second question I have here, because it's about like a design trope almost. Like, what's your take on the tappable stories format for displaying content on the web? Mm-hmm. So, well, let's define that for a minute. I feel like, what was it? Snapchat had it. You know, you go to somebody's Snapchat and it's just these like vertical videos or photos, but they're transient, right? You just look at it for a second, then you click on the right side of the screen and it just goes to the next one. And you're just like, next, you know, content me with my friend's stuff. And then all of a sudden, Instagram is like, oh, yeah, we have that, too, because it's just a, you know, from a UI perspective, it's just like a different way to show some stuff and a different way to scroll through it. It's like not particularly hard thing to replicate. But it was so popular. I mean, Snapchat's like almost making a comeback. The stories are huge on Instagram. Now YouTube has it. I open the YouTube app on my phone, and that's what my daughter wants to flip through is all these like kids channels YouTube produce these stories. Yeah. Everybody does stories now. Facebook's got stories now. Google AMP has stories. Everything has stories now. It's just, it took over. Like, apparently, like, thanks, Snapchat. Apparently, you've invented, like, the most incredible way of the people that everybody wants to replicate. Is it, like, a massive trend? Or, I mean, it must be a slightly more than a trend. It must show high engagement numbers, you'd think. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm, sorry, Nick, my opinion is not very high. I literally quit using Instagram, like, the day they launched stories because I just can't handle it. I can't handle, like, hey, Insta, what's up? I cut a toenail today. You know, like, I just can't do it. Like, I just, get me out of this.
Hey, I'm going to join the old man club here, too, because I don't like stories either. They just don't do it for me.
However, I think it's like what is, almost like when you, like, reduce a soup or something like that. It's a reduction of, like, what is content now? It's tweets. And then what is, like, we used to make movies and then we made 10 minute YouTubes and now we make 30 second stories, you know, like here's just whatever, me riding my bike.
Yeah.
Facing the sun.
How small can I get? You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just a reduction.
To some degree, I see value in it. Like that, like sometimes when you take an idea and you boil it down so far that it's this little digestible nugget, that there's something, there's some kind of value to that that is to be learned from occasionally. Like if I can explain to you how filters work in CSS by just showing you the original image, showing you what a three lines of CSS so that I could apply a filter to and then show you the result of that image. That's so tiny of a little nugget of knowledge that I think people get it. Like you, or I could read a 40-page chapter in CSS, the deep stuff, or some, you know, fictional CSS book that just deep dives into filters. I'm not, you know, I probably won't read that chapter, but I will see an Instagram that just says that. So, you know, sometimes it's useful. But yeah, if the whole world becomes little bite-sized chunks, you know, is that good?
It doesn't seem great. But, you know, who is a Chris Enns, podcast editor here? He showed us this guy who teaches web dev on TikTok. Do you remember that? He was telling us about it, but like there's somebody on TikTok. I wish I was looking for their name so I could, like, you know, whatever, boost them, but I don't think they need boosting. I think they have a lot of people on TikTok watching their development videos and they're like, okay, hey TikTok, we're going to talk about array for loops or whatever. Like, I don't know. I mean, it's cool. Like, I mean, it's not what I would be like, oh, that's the, I want to do a little tiny story format for teaching web development, but people love it. So I'm just an old. I miss out on all that free engagement. But I don't know. It's interesting. I'm just not there. Just purely on the stories part of it. And maybe that's my own fault for the people I know.
You just got to be careful sometimes about stuff like that. When the medium changes over time, the medium has changed forever, and it's almost the responsibility of the olds to wave their hand at the new, and then the new people will get used to what they have, and it will change on them, and they'll wave their fist at the people in front of them. It's just the circle of life of how this stuff goes, you know. Learn from the mistakes of the past. You're old. You don't know the new environment.
I don't like these new short holograms that people send each other. These holograms are holograms.
Yeah.
Back in my day, you just watch a video.
Yeah. We just read the moon newspaper.
Yeah. So I don't know. But is it something front end has to care about? I imagine doing stories like in a front end responsive context is kind of difficult, but y'all kind of just did it. Not like exactly, but on CodePen, you have the new like feature or like preview, right? Like on your item grid.
I hadn't thought of it right? In that way, but that's not terribly different.
But yeah. Is that a story format? I mean, you're kind of just like, boom, here's the thing you wanted to kind of see. Like, here's a preview.
Yeah, and you can go next, because it's paginated. I think that's the most value in it is the fact that you don't have to close it and then open another one. You can just click. So, I mean, if you're rapid totally fire, confused too. About what we're talking about, and Dribbble did this before us, and I'm sure it's actually how Instagram web works too. You know, you go to, if you're on a desktop computer and you go to Instagram.com/CodePen or /Chris Coy or whatever, you see a grid of photos, you open one up and it opens up in a modal. It doesn't close what's behind it because everything's in SPA these days. Why would you do that? So it opens up in a modal and you can paginate through the modal too. So it's kind of like a story. It's weird to talk about in Instagram context because Instagram actually has actual stories too that aren't this. But I get the connection that you're making, and you know, so I'm just looking at one thing at a time, and I can literally use the arrow keys and go boom, 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 boom through the things. You know, Dribbble has that now. You look at a shot in a bigger context to forward, 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 forward. But at any time, you can just hit the escape key or click outside of it, and it closes. Yeah, that's what we just launched on CodePen.
So I love it on CodePen. I love it on Dribbble. Like, Dribbble is not maybe my preferred, but it does save like a back button. I can just click out the modal, and that actually is kind of nice. But like, do you want this on e-commerce? Like, oh, okay, Chris, you're on Amazon. You want to buy some sneakers. Do you want to like... Do you want this UI or do you want the classic product grid to go to product page? I mean, what do you think?
I don't know. I wouldn't want stories for products. I wouldn't want to land on Amazon and have it just be like this grid of little movies you have to watch.
Little commercials. Yeah, like Netflix, basically. Like you hover over a product and it starts playing a commercial for it. That would be awful.
The thing is, these big companies that are doing this, they don't do it on a whim. They don't do it just to be, you know, they might dabble in it just because some other company is doing it. But these big companies do everything by the numbers. It must be showing them that the engagement gets higher, or it's working, or people are buying stuff or something. You know, there's like no accidents in these when it comes to this scale.
In the context of Instagram or whatever, you know, it's probably cheap to produce, you know? I mean, I guess people put effort into it, but like you point your camera at something that's happening and then you put some text over it, and then you because of Instagram being Instagram, they're like, hey, your friend just put another video up. Love it. You know, watch it. And like, that was my thing, maybe more so than the content I was watching, was the demand to like tune in to this ad hoc TV station.
Yeah.
You know, that was getting me.
Well, so in a way you're honing in on the content that happens in these stories. But if we zoom out from that a little bit and talk about what is it, it's like an interaction method. So it's just like an alternative. One way to think about it is an alternative to scrolling is like, I just want to like tap on the right side of the screen or swipe or something to get to the next one rather than scroll my fingers upwards like a web page. And maybe the what's being talked about here is that like scrolling is just like the way we used to do things because that's how the web was built. It's just an old school legacy thing. And things are of unknown heights. So we just stretch them taller and then use scrolling as the mechanism to get to that content. But if you know, in a way, stories are like, no, forget scrolling. This is the size you get. You press the right side of the screen to get more. And it's just a different input mechanism.
Yeah, it's a PowerPoint, not a vertical scroll.
Yeah. So is that good?
Watch my PowerPoint. Hey, everybody. Watch my PowerPoint.
It's like PDFizing the web or something.
I'm trying to think, too, like, you know, like we just talked about newsletters. Like if Dan Sinker's impeachment.fyi was this like tappable stories, I don't know that I'd like it, but maybe if it was text blocks, you know, it'd be like, here's text block one for the day, here's text block two, you know, or something like that. Like maybe I'd find that more enjoyable. It's just little digestibles, you know, pieces of content, but yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I think you should write a blog post on your thoughts and let us know, and we can follow up on that. I'd be curious if it seems like a big revolution. So
this episode is sponsored by Netlify. Building off of what Chris and Dave were just talking about, Netlify is the perfect place to begin a new Jamstack site, like your new blog for your dog, let's say. With Netlify, you can grab one of their templates and deploy to Netlify with just one click. The site's code will automatically populate as a new folder in your Git repository, so you can explore, edit, and update so it works for you, all for free. There's lots of super powerful things that Netlify can do for you, for your web app and things like that. This is exactly what drew me to Netlify, and the ability to quickly fire up a website, test out an idea, and or use some of the new tech to build websites with, without having to worry about hosting and getting that all configured. So you can visit templates.netlify.com and use the Deploy to Netlify button on their Jamstack templates to create a Git repository linked to a Netlify site that you can experiment with right now. They've got templates for things like Nuxt, Gatsby, Eleventy, Eleventy with Netlify CMS, Eleventy with serverless functions, Ember.js, more Gatsby, lots of Gatsby e-commerce stuff, a Ghost-based Gatsby blog, Hexo and Hugo, Hyde, all the H's are covered, Jekyll, of course, Middleman, Gridsome, and lots more that I've never even heard of, but it would be fun to play around with. And that's what Netlify allows you to do. By deploying your template site to Netlify with just one click, you can start working on your blog, your idea, test out something even, without having to worry about server infrastructure and costs and where you're going to host it. And then later on, you can take advantage of Netlify's integrated DNS to register a domain and have that all hooked up right away and ready to go when your site's live. So check them out at netlify.com. And like I said, templates.netlify.com is where you can go if you're interested in trying out one of their templates to start off a Jamstack site of your own. Our thanks to Netlify for sponsoring this episode.
Not to get in too far into AMP, but AMP's probably just copying what somebody else is doing because they think it provides money value and they probably somehow figure it out how to make money, extract money.
It's kind of like stories for SERPs.
Yeah. Search engine people love stories. Here's the values they provide. You ready?
Yep.
They create beautiful, engaging content. Mm-hmm. They create creative flexibility and editorial freedom and branding. Shareable and linkable on the open web. They track and measure. Wink. fast loading times. Immersive storytelling. Robust advertising support. Oh, yeah. There you go.
Robust.
I don't know. I think it's just, I think we are visual people too, you know, and there's some gamification there. Like you see a picture of a person or a video game you like, or, you know, I'm looking at the picture of Antarctica, you know, and I'm just like, I always care about Antarctica. I'm just going to click it, you know? And so I go to it and then I get a, you know, seven little micro movies, you know, with text overlaid. So it's not terrible. It's just, I don't know. I don't know. I don't want the whole internet to become a PowerPoint, I guess is what I want to say. So
this is
rather it just be curated content, like, or just I want good content. I don't necessarily want like I don't the form factor I care less about. I want good content more than the form factor. So
here's the, I got this, I'm in this like local JavaScript Slack, and I got a message last night, not to me, but just in the Slack that I saw, that made me a little sad. I installed a PWA on my phone and want to share a link of the site to somebody. Does anybody know how to get the URL of it? I'm Googling, but I can't find anything. I'm like, aw, that sucks. Like, they have a PWA they installed on their phone probably ages ago, and they just want to share it because it's a freaking website, and websites have URLs, and they should be able to share those URLs, and they can't figure it out. There's no way to get the URL. What?
So Windows PWAs are actually solving this problem a little better. There's like a triple burger menu, like a shish kebab kind of drop down thing. If you install from Edge, and it'll do prompts, or like that's my app, prompts.daveruper.com. But it'll tell you like the URL there, and you can copy URL or open it in the browser as well. So, but you know, desktop web is way different than mobile web, which is way different than what Google decides it's going to do. So, or even Samsung does it a little bit different. So
maybe they don't want, you know, they're, you know, in a way it's like a feature, right? They're like, don't think of this as a website. It is a full blown app now.
An app now. Mm. What's the URL? We don't, we killed.
Looks like the answer was like use the web share API within it is the vibe.
Which I tried to do that on prompts, which is my little drawing app I made. Mm-hmm. Man, WebShare can only do text. So like, back to this, we're visual people in a visual medium. You can't share an image. So like compose a tweet with an image. Like, you can't do that. That's seems like a bummer. It seems like a very gaping hole. I think they have plans to fix it in V2 or whatever, but you know, Safari doesn't even have V1, or maybe it has V1, but like, I don't know. Web share means you should be able to share the thing you're looking at, not just a URL.
Yeah, or maybe that's just a V2 thing. I don't know. I know what you mean, though. There's already meta tags that say this is the image that I want shared with stuff. Like, why isn't that baked in?
Yeah, I mean, I guess at a minimum level, I expect what Facebook share is like, where
right.
you paste the URL in there, and it's like, cool, you want this image from that page that you just posted?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, sure.
Yeah. Buffer, Twitter. Okay. Well, just an interesting thing. Let's do this first question. I think is interesting for us to spend the rest of the show on, probably, and not get to any of the other great questions we have, but here, that is the way it is. So Don Livingston he's in this world of headless CMSs, single page apps, and thinking about SEO. So Don, he says, I'm kicking around the idea of setting up a blog using a headless CMS. You know, we've talked about those. Think Contentful, you know, or Sanity or whatever. On the back end to store all my posts and content, and then using React or Vue to render the front end as a single page app. So, you know, this is hot. Mm-hmm. This is hot right now. A lot of people building in this way. You're separating your front end from your back end on purpose in whatever.
Jamstack it.
Yeah.
Jamstacking
it. Right. You pretty much are at this point, because that means your front end can be totally static files, your CSS, your bundle, and all that stuff. Like, it'd be weird to not post it on a site like Netlify if that's the case. So I've been reading up on best practices, and the topic of SEO keeps coming up. So it's one thing to choose this route, but then, like, what are the SEO implications of that? Assuming you're not doing like a Gatsby thing where you're pre-rendering it, or, you know, ViewPress or whatever. Because of the nature of single-page apps, search engines seem to be a little finicky about crawling and indexing them. The options seem to be SSR, okay, or pre-rendering. So, you know, those things can be different. You can run an app like this and have Node on the back end generating those pages, which is more like SSR, or pre-rendering, which is more like Gatsby or 11t or whatever, where it's actually making HTML files. There is no back end at all. The hang-up I have is whether that is, you know, every time you add content, you need to re-render your whole site. So as Dave, you well know, you know, you write a new blog post, Jekyll has to run, it does a whole thing, you deploy the whole ball of wax, you know. What's the deal? Do I re-render the whole site? Or like, what's the deal with SEO and here in general? Like, is this a big consideration going down this road? Well, like we said, like, it kind of isn't if you're pre-rendering or doing SSR. Then you kind of don't have to think about it in a way because it'll be treated just like any other website is. But I think the word from Google is that you're not going to get penalized for a JavaScript rendered app. I don't think so. I don't think that's a net negative, although, you know, we just don't really, 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 really know what they penalize and don't penalize for. We'll never know. I feel like I hope when I'm 80 years old, a book will come out called, like, you know, because Google's long dead by now. And they're like, we're going to tell you how we actually ranked things or something. Be like the greatest tell-all of all time. But
we just guessed.
It will take longer. They are telling you not even a little bit longer, a lot longer, super longer, a week longer to render, not only, you know, to get it through that special JavaScript rendering queue, but every time you make an update too, that takes a week too. So, wow, you know, it's not an SEO penalty. So if it's just really generally pretty static stuff, although if it's pretty static stuff, why are you doing this type of rendering at all? But, you know.
Yeah, that's my understanding, is it happens on a second pass. Like, first Google bot comes by and is like, oh, I got nothing. I'll put this on my to-do later list. And it comes back and does it. Google bot, we know, is running Chrome. Like, it's running Chromium or Puppeteer or something like that. And I think this last week or a couple of weeks ago, I guess now, at Chrome Dev Summit, there was a talk on SEO. And I think I had heard the statistic. This is hearsay, so grain of salt. But 5 seconds of execution time. So if you have more than 5 seconds of JavaScript happening, Googlebot's like, hey, sorry, I'm busy, I can't do it. So you have to consider that too. Like if your whole strategy is I'm gonna chuck down a Giganto framework and all that crap and then like spit out a page, like Googlebot might not, you know, do it. But then again, I assume Googlebot's connected to the Ethernet. It's not on 3G. It's not a mobile phone. I assume Googlebot is a juiced up supercomputer that tries to get through indexing the web as fast as it can. You know what I mean? Like, it's got RAM. It's got at least 2 sticks of RAM. It's not, you know what I mean? Like,
well, that would be fascinating. How many milliseconds does it take to absolutely, totally digest and rank every single bit of everything on DaveRupert.com? I would think in the tens of milliseconds or less. That would be my guess.
I think if Google spent more than that on my site, they would be costing themselves money. You know what I mean? Like it would be more money to in CPU time to index my site than
it was
money they would get for referring my site. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
So I would, yeah. So I, you know, so if it takes over 5 seconds, it's going to bail. So that's something to consider. The math, like you tell me 5 seconds, I understand what 5 seconds are, but like the infrastructure behind that, I don't understand. So, I would be curious what that infrastructure is. You know, I just have more questions. You tell me one little thing about the Googlebot, I have 10 more questions. But, so if it is a concern, and this is too, you need to decide, are you an SEO based company? You know, is CodePen an SEO company? Like, are you making a gigantic SEO play? Not really, right? Like, you probably have some concerns, but CSS Tricks is an SEO company, right? Like,
you
very much depend on SEO. So.
Right. Yes. To the level that there's no way I'm just going to like jump to fully client-side rendered site. That would be enough of a consideration alone that I wouldn't do it. At the same time, I generally don't think of SEO that much. I'm not sitting around thinking about SEO every day for what we do. You know, we just publish some stuff and it's cool. But Google's good enough to us with results that I wouldn't want to screw it up. And that I think would almost certainly screw it up. So that's that. But I think you'd have a good point though. Like, are people worried about SEO like a little too much for their little personal blog or whatever? Like, if SEO isn't a big part of your business model, like, who cares? Just do whatever you want, you know.
Well, and to some degree too, like Google has a search index thing. You know what I'm talking about? It's like a hood, a heads up display. It basically like tells you,
really
tries to inform you what it knows about your site. it used to be under Google Webmaster Tools or whatever. Let me see if I can pull it up here live searching here. Search Console is what it's called now. Sign in.
I didn't realize it like laid over your own site though. I've used that, that just like gives you warnings when you're screwing stuff up.
Yeah, well, and it gives you like performance and kind of, you know, but I think, you know, you could say like if you're flatlined, like, you know, that would be a problem, but it gives you like coverage. It tells me I have 17,500 errors right now, which doesn't, oh, that's not my website. Haha, sorry, client. So let's go to, where's DaveRupert.com?
Yeah, what do you got? What are your errors, man?
Oh, I don't even see it, man. Let's see. Have I messed this up that much?
Maybe it's a little neglected over the year.
Oh, yeah. Well, I had a problem where, like, my entire search just, like, disappeared entirely. So, like all of it became unindexed. And I was getting warnings from this thing I signed up for dozens of years ago.
Not great.
No, not good at all. I don't even, dude. I maybe deleted it because it was not providing me value. But anyway, Google Search Console, it's a thing where you can at least see like what has been indexed in your site. So you could probably even track this yourself. You could probably be like, okay, I posted a blog post, you know, on my Gatsby or whatever client side SPA. Like, did it show up here? Is it indexed here? Is anyone getting to it from here? So, but that's also hard too. Like, unless you're a significant volume, you're not going to show up in the first page of search results, you know, unless you're a big enough website. Again, back to the, can you just start a blog now in 2K19? You know, I don't know.
I would like to think that you can, for the record, to end that conversation. Like, I very much want people to blog and can point to not just myself of being bloggers extra great for my career, but countless other people, you know, that I've just been, and that are self-aware of it too, that say, you know, what's really helped me has been my writing. So,
and I want to say, draw a distinction between like personal blogs. Like, I feel like every developer, every designer should have a space on the web that you call yours. Like that's what we do. Let's own this, you know? It's a pain to maintain, but welcome to the internet. But the like, I'm more in the like the business side of things. Like, could you start, you know?
Yeah. Okay. What, that's like a good point. Deuce, like, of course you need, like, everybody should have a personal blog, but yeah, you're making a distinction about the stuff we talked earlier that is like the, I don't know, this business or at least pseudo business type of blog.
Yeah. My camping lifestyle blog. So can I do that? I don't know. So
I feel like it's been questionable the whole time. Even then, it was questionable. Like, there was no moment.
I think that's true. Yeah. It was a golden ticket, you know. But it was big hype, and then, you know, and then it was, I'm going to start a podcast for a while, and then it was.
And there was a heyday for display advertising. There was a moment in which that putting display ads on your site was a freaking gold mine. And the bubble burst on it. So before that was a big deal. And there's an XOXO talk from Deuce about that. I think that's really worth watching because she got to like ride that wave and had to like reinvent herself after that.
I mean, for those who don't know, and I swear, Chris Ence maybe knows Deuce, but basically mommy blogger before before anything, right?
Yeah, like, but like real talking one.
Just real talk. Like, my baby threw up on me this morning. Mm-hmm. Welcome to motherhood. Like, and it was just, you know, I knew a lot of young mothers who just read this blog insatiably because it was the one. And so, but now, you know, she's older, kids are older and all that.
Well, I had to pivot into sponsor content and all kinds of different things, which I'm here for your pivots. You know, I've had to pivot a number of times. Like, maybe I'll sell a product kind of thing. Maybe display ads are good. Like, display ads are like not back, but like weirdly a lot better than they used to be. And sponsored content is now starting to become past its heyday, weirdly enough. And
weird, yeah.
It was all kinds.
What about backlinks? If you put a link on your website, I will those emails you get.
Yeah. every day.
I still think about this. What can I sell for $10 thing? Oh my God. And I bring it up at parties and no one's entertained, but I still think about it quite a bit. What can I sell for $10?
Well, I just like, I don't know. If you're asking me, I like that and like less the impeachment FYI thing. Like, it's not like I don't think you should have donate links on there, but the value proposition is so much more squishy wishy. It's just like, I don't know, just give me some money because you like my thing is less clear than give me some money and you get a very clear X. And when you sell something for $10, yeah, that value proposition is just there. And I think that because I've like been chasing that business model for like a long time and have lots of like envy of the other side coming from an app like Woofoo, which had, you know, I'd worked there, but I wasn't, you know, I had no stake in it, was the clearest value proposition ever. Do you need these forms? Yeah. Well, we have this baby free plan. And then if you need more than that, it was clear as day when you needed to upgrade and why and what you get for upgrading. And that business model is just great. And then, you know, move to CodePen where our business model is just way more nebulous. There is no like clear moment in which like you've surpassed the free tier and just need it. And I think just my jealousy essentially of like more clear business models gets me. And then at the same time, I'm like, I can see how other people think the grass is greener on the other side. Like what we have on CodePen is like an incredible amount of traffic. And we can, you know, we can leverage that in different ways because most usage of CodePen is free, that we have this like, you know, that's our advantage. You know, Woofoo didn't have any traffic. They just had a clear product. So I don't know. I'm just a fan of the product thing. Pay us X, get X is just as...
Yes, it's good. X. No. Pay X for Y. So yeah, no, that's true. And yeah, as much as, because and Dan's thing too is very much like, no, just pay me and I'll make stuff, you know, that I was probably going to make anyway. You know, like it's not like X for Y. It's like, just pay me. Like, so, which is, you know, but yeah, I'd be interested how it worked out. So, well, cool. We should wrap up here, huh? We'll get it. Otherwise, we're going to get into another topic that just will take another.
We actually need to do a rapid fire one of these ones where we give ourselves a very clear time limit of how long to answer a question.
Oh, we'll do another time limit.
Apparently, yeah. We are talkers. Yeah,
like to talk. Yes, but this let's get. We'll do that. Maybe in the next one we'll do that. And we are kind of a. I think when this goes out, you know, we're going to kind of wrap up the end of the year. We're heading towards the end of the year. We will take a little holiday break, but you know, we still have a few shows left this year. So tune in. We appreciate you listening, downloading this in your podcatcher choice. Be sure to start our favorite up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of tweets a month. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one because people want to hire people like you. And Chris, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
ShopTalkShow.com.